You're listening to the Crosscheck NHL Show, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Here are your hosts, Andrew Berkshire and Mary Clark.
Hello, and welcome to the Crosscheck NHL Show. Today's episode is brought to you by Locked On NHL. You need more hockey news, and Locked On NHL is here to fill the gap. It's our daily podcast on everything happening in the league. Subscribe and listen each day for a quick look at the biggest stories and game recaps each day. Subscribe to Locked On NHL today, wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Mary Clark, staff writer at For the Win, and you can follow me on Twitter at Mary C. Clark. I'm here with Andrew Berkshire, NHL analyst for the Montreal Gazette, who you can follow on Twitter at Andrew Berkshire. On this Tuesday edition of the Crosscheck, we'll update you on the unfortunate and incredibly tragic sexual assault allegations that have come to light in the Chicago Blackhawks organization. We'll also say our goodbyes to the Golden Knights and Islanders, and preview the upcoming Stanley Cup final between the Canadiens and Lightning. So Andrew, before we start off today's show, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I got a great sleep last night. I went to bed at like 9:30, so it was like a very early night. I took advantage of there being not very much hockey, and we were outside most of the day yesterday for a friend of ours who's moving away. It was like growing away party. Mm-hmm. So both kids were very exhausted from being outside in the heat. I think it hit over 40 degrees Celsius here, so that's like 105 or so in American numbers. And they slept perfectly, so it was a great evening and a great night. I feel very refreshed this morning, more energy than I've had in weeks.
Yeah, that's good. And it's always nice. I mean, it's nice to have like that couple day break between like the conference finals and the Stanley Cup final, just to, you know, relax and reset, because like it can go super fast. And I mean, as you guys know, I was away on vacation for the last week, so I didn't have to do any podcasting. I know you and Laura handled everything super well. And thank you to Laura for stepping in on my behalf so I could go sit on the beach and do absolutely nothing and have a really nice vacation. So I feel super rested and relaxed. So I got to spend a bunch of time outside over the past week, but it is since now here in Pennsylvania where I live, it is now like 90 degrees. So I'm like, all right, I've had enough outside. It's inside in the air conditioning for some time now. I'll let the outside, you know, cool off a little bit before I step out there again.
Yeah, air conditioning is one of the greatest inventions of humankind. And I know that realistically it is contributing to global warming, but I like my air conditioning when it's this hot outside. You need some sort of escape. And if you're not rich enough to own a pool, you got to have some air conditioning.
Oh, don't say that, Andrew. My parents have an inflatable pool, so we have one outside right now. Technically, I could go in, but
when I was a kid, my parents had a pool when I lived in Moose Jaw, but they don't anymore, and I don't live with them. So on my own here in Montreal, I don't have the money for a pool.
Yeah, growing up, my grandmother, who lives like 5-10 minutes away from the house, she had a pool growing up, so for most of my life I had like a pool nearby that I could go to, and my mom was the same, like, you know, she grew up with a pool and stuff like that. So when my grandmother took it down, it was one of those things where like she's like, I need a pool to survive in the summer, I need it. And I'm like, all right, so we're gonna do an inflatable pool, and it's worked out really well. It's really nice. It's just a nice convenience to have, because like I can go outside in the pool, then sit outside and like read or listen to podcasts or whatever for a little bit. It's just nice to get outside. But now it's like disgusting outside. When I was on vacation, it was quite nice. It was in the 70s, or, you know, a 20 some degrees Celsius if you're Canadian listening to this. So it was quite nice while I was on vacation, but now it's like miserable. It's like it's summer is here, unfortunately.
I love summer. I need to have my escapes, right? Like if I could spend 80% of summer swimming, I would. I love swimming, and I guess that's part of like growing up with a pool, but I think the combination of the pandemic continuing to rage on and you know, not having a pool access ourselves, it becomes frustrating. But it's getting better. We're in the quote unquote green zone here in Montreal now, so things are opening back up. Indoor dining is open for like limited capacity, nice. So hopefully soon we'll be able to get a babysitter and just have a night out ourselves.
Nice. I'm glad things are opening up, because I know when I got vaccinated, you guys in Canada were still, you know, on lockdown. So I kind of felt bad being like, oh, I'm vaccinated, I can go see people again. But now I'm glad it's, you know, starting to open up for you. And it's weird because I was, you know, on vacation, but there was like a boardwalk and stuff, so I could like walk around there and nobody was wearing masks. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. I feel weird.
Yeah.
I would like to wear masks for the foreseeable future out in public. It's one of those things where it's so weird going back into the world right now. But obviously we know that it's still, you know, you should still be safe and stuff like that because the variants and whatnot. So I hope everybody out there is, you know, doing their best to stay safe.
For sure.
But I guess we have to bring it down a little bit because it's the big story in hockey right now. And a big content warning on this story for sexual assault and stuff like that. So if you don't want to listen, skip ahead. You kind of know where our breaks end up being at this point in our shows. So if you want to skip ahead, go for it. I'm not going to. It's a tough story. So this goes all the way back to May. The Chicago Blackhawks video coach, Brad Aldrich. According to Rick Westhead of TSN, during the Cup run in 2010, sexually assaulted two players in the lead up to the Cup final. And this story, I looked back at Rick Westhead's author page on TSN. This was reported first back on May 13th. So this has been going for a little while, but it kind of blew up over the past couple of weeks because of more developments that have happened. So video coach Brad Aldrich during the team Cup run in 2010 sexually assaulted two players in the lead up to the Cup final. It was quote unquote an open secret in the organization. And all of this reporting is from Rick Westhead, by the way. Chicago didn't take it to the police, reportedly. The Blackhawks then also gave him a positive reference for employment, which then he left the team and sexually assaulted a high school minor in 2013. And because of that, he is now convicted of fourth degree criminal sexual conduct and is a registered sex offender in Michigan, I believe is where that took place. So that's kind of all the background on that. More reporting from Mark Lazarus, Katie Strang, Scott Powers with The Athletic, reported more stuff on that. I think recently it came out today, Monday when we're recording this, that the Blackhawks are conducting an internal investigation on this. But according to Katie Strang, also of The Athletic, that the firm hired by them to investigate the allegations, Jenner and Block, also represented USA Gymnastics in the bankruptcy proceedings in the wake of the Larry Nassar scandal, which you remember happened at Michigan State, I believe that was. So there's a whole lot to break down here, but I think for me the biggest thing, I mean, I don't know if Andrew, you have anything else to put into that timeline of events. There's a lot to recap you on, and I don't want to spend all that time going into the nitty-gritty of it because it is a very disgusting and disturbing story.
I think there was also there was somebody else that lawyer also represented that I'm struggling to remember now, but somebody had mentioned it in the comments and the replies to, excuse me, to Katie Strang. But this lawyer has a long history of representing, R. Kelly. This lawyer represented R. Kelly or R. Kelly's interests during several of the accusations against him, and essentially their work or this firm, their work helped R. Kelly continue to abuse women. So while the Blackhawks are initiating an investigation, the people that they've hired are very much about damage control instead of finding truth. And I think that's extremely unfortunate. And, you know, obviously there's lots of questions for many people involved with the Blackhawks organization and the NHL at large. The way they're handling this is not very good at all. It's frustrating as much as it's expected. You know, like, I think we've come to expect this from the league now, and like the Blackhawks in particular have already dealt with sexual misconduct allegations against Patrick Kane in a very unsatisfying manner. At least with Patrick Kane, you kind of understand that there is a lot to gain from continuing to employ Patrick Kane and defend him, right? He's a star NHL player. He's not somebody who's easily replaceable. Whereas the whole Brad Aldrich thing, We should also mention that there were allegations surrounding him before he joined the Blackhawks as well. That was reported, I believe, by Rick Westhead and Katie Strang, that he had left previous jobs after being caught or reported that he'd had parties where he'd invited players over and got them intoxicated with minors as well. So this is a player who had a history before he was with the Blackhawks. And if we want to give the unbelievable stretch of a benefit of the doubt that they didn't know that they didn't do a background check on somebody that they're hiring, the fact that they were clearly aware at the management level that this was occurring or that these allegations existed and quietly let the person go while giving them a reference letter to be hired by someone else where he again abused minors, it is so unbelievably gross that this was that this person was not just let go without consequence by the Blackhawks, but I'm trying to think of the word, like, facilitated by the Blackhawks, you know? And maybe, like, the NHL at large may not have known until then, but the fact that they've been essentially refusing to comment, this league doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've proven again and again that they don't care about this issue. You know, Dan Carcillo tweeted that when he was on the Flyers against the Blackhawks in the Stanley Cup final, that they had heard about this.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, because... so if opposing teams know, you know, it just, everybody in the Blackhawks organization, I think, had to have some knowledge of what was going on, especially, like, in management, right? Like, things like this spread like wildfire. And I know that Kevin Cheveldayoff, I don't think, has responded. I think the Jets just responded through their PR that he didn't know. Mark Bergevin was asked by Katie Strang in his press conference before the Stanley Cup final, and he specifically mentioned that he wasn't involved in the meeting that took place between management and, I think, a video coach or a skills coach that
there was a coach in the Blackhawks organization that was advocating for the two players.
Their skills coach.
I don't remember his name. Yeah. I'll try and find it while you're talking, but
yeah. So this skills coach, the players had gone to him and he was advocating on their behalf, and cause he was a former police officer, I believe. And, he was saying, like, they needed to take this to the police. They had to get the police involved, and the Blackhawks did not do so. The decision was made at this secret, quote-unquote, meeting between management and a couple of coaches. And, you know, I don't think Joel Quenneville has been asked about this yet because he's not currently coaching. Like, it's the offseason for him. There's no media availability available. But Mark Bergevin, he said that he didn't know at the time, and he wasn't involved in this meeting. It seems to be confirmed that he wasn't involved in the meeting. I think at the time is doing a lot of work for Mark Bergevin there. Mm-hmm. It's a big qualifier. Whether he knew at the time of that meeting or later on, I think it's very, very unlikely that somebody who's as plugged in as Mark Bergevin, who was, I believe, the director of player personnel with the Blackhawks, did not know or did not even have a hint of what was going on. I don't want to call him a liar, but
mm-hmm.
I also look at Mark Bergevin's history of signing Nick Cousins, who was accused of sexual assault when he was in juniors, of publicly confirmed, well, not publicly confirmed by the Canadians, but confirmed by several reporters that I know, that he was interested in Slava Voynov after his domestic abuse allegations. I think Mark Bergevin has demonstrated in the past that he doesn't really care about that kind of off-ice behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm left at a loss here of what to think of these people until more comes out. Like, honestly, we can't assume the absolute worst about every single person, but I want to see somebody stand up and take some ownership here and mm-hmm. get ahead of it. Like, deny does not work long term.
Yeah. There's a couple things here. Like you mentioned, Mark Bergevin, the GM for the Blackhawks, who is still the GM for the Blackhawks, Stan Bowman.
Yep.
Definitely going to have to answer some questions. Bergevin, Joel Quenneville. And we're recording this before the Stanley Cup final on Monday night, but Gary Bettman, too, is going to be faced with questions.
Yes.
Monday night, because he does the, the media availability right before the Stanley Cup. I don't know when that happens on Monday, but I am sure that there will be questions levied at him. I don't think he'll say anything of substance because he's a lawyer and he knows how to avoid those types of things. But I really hope that the media in that press conference tries to grill him as best as possible and doesn't, you know, make any questions about anything else other than that. We're going to have people giving us answers, and I hope that we get answers. I don't know if we will, because I know this is the NHL. But I keep circling back to the fact that the Blackhawks didn't do anything. And, like, obviously the original, like, two players being assaulted is terrible and horrible and gross in its own right. But this also happened to a minor, directly because the Blackhawks turned a blind eye to it. And that's where it gets me. I mean, there's also, in the hockey perspective, this happened in 2010 when the Blackhawks were facing the Flyers, and... as you know, I'm a noted Flyers fan, so that stings just a little bit, because that was, you know, my favorite team at the times, best shot at the Stanley Cup, and knowing this was happening, it stings. But the bigger thing to me is the human element to this, and I don't think I'm going to ever be over the fact that because of what the Blackhawks didn't do, this guy turned around and did it to a minor, and that is reprehensible and
unforgivable.
Unforgivable, yeah. I don't know if there's anything else you want to say on this topic, Andrew. It is very, it's a heavy topic. I mean, we talked about the Jake Virtanen stuff a couple weeks ago, months ago now. It's been some time, but we also had to, you know, bring it down a bit for something like that too. And these are tough situations to talk about. And I hope the media continues to stay on the NHL on this. I'm just a lowly podcaster. I don't have any sway or pull with, you know, anybody big in the organization. So I really hope that, you know, the big names in the NHL media continue to drill Gary Bettman and everybody possibly involved on this until we get answers, until maybe some justice is delivered. Who knows? It's hard to have any hope because we know how this has gone for the NHL in the past. Like, we've seen this before with other, you know, situations like this, that it will just die down and fade away and nothing will really come of it. But I hope things change. I don't know about you. I mean, obviously you do too, Andrew, but I don't know if you have anything else you want to add before we move on from this.
Yeah, I mean, for me, heads have to roll for this. People mm-hmm. have to be fired. There might even be criminal charges laid, like obstruction of justice of some sort. But something needs to happen here. This isn't one that can fade away. And I think that as much as both of us are probably of the mind that the NHL will try to just wait this out until things quiet down and hope that it goes away, I think that if you could handpick two journalists in the hockey landscape to get on this story, to see it through, you could not possibly do better than Rick Westhead and Katie Strang.
Oh, absolutely.
They are, in my opinion, the two best investigative journalists this sport has to offer. I'm so glad that both of them are on it. And the heavy topics that these two have to handle all the time, I hope that they have some time off at some point in the summer. I just want to see it through. It's going to be tough to like constantly see it in the headlines, I'm sure. And for people who are victims of this sort of behavior, our hearts go out to you. And I hope that this is settled in a matter that's satisfying, and for the victims as well. There's not really that much else to say. It's just such a disgusting situation, and the Blackhawks should once again be ashamed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I guess in the future, if there's, you know, more important updates, we'll talk about this topic as well, because it is, you know, important to talk about and important to discuss. But we will, of course, if this is a topic not for your liking or you're not comfortable with it, you're more than welcome to step out. I encourage you to step out if it's not good for your mental health.
Yes.
You know, I think Andrew and I both are pretty big advocates for, you know, self-care and mental health. So do what you can. Keep yourself healthy. I don't have any transition out of this to our ad break, so I'm sorry, guys. I got nothing today. So I'll just go right into it. This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing only the brands their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Rockauto.com is a family business, serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks, delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us?" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, lively low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. All right, Andrew. On to the hockey that we have seen over the past week or so.
Yeah, we'll try to bring the energy up a little. And
yeah, it is.
It's tough to follow up that story, but mm-hmm. we're gonna do our best. We're gonna have some fun here anyway, so please stick with us here.
Yeah. So we're gonna talk about, at least first off, we're gonna preview Stanley Cup final in our cross check of the week, because that is coming up. It will be Tuesday when you hear this, so game one, the result of game one will be known by now. But just, you know, think back to Monday when you were listening to this. And put yourselves in our shoes and, you know, think about what's going to happen. Because we've got everybody's favorite Canada team, the Montreal Canadiens, versus the juggernaut, Tampa Bay Lightning. And I know you guys, you and Laura, Andrew, talked a lot about last week about the Canadians being, you know, the underdogs, thriving under, you know, the no one likes us, we don't care. Kind of like that. Reminds me of the Philadelphia Eagles when they won their Super Bowl. They were the underdogs with the with the dog masks and stuff like that. I get a very similar vibe to this Canadians team. And I know it was kind of harsh on them before, but I've turned around on this team. You know what? Good for them. I'm happy they're here. They have proved themselves, and I have turned around from them, you know, making me seem dumb because I picked them and they didn't do well, and then they started to do well, and I was like, no, this is fake. No, good for them. I'm glad they're here, but I don't think I'm gonna pick them in this series, Andrew. I don't know about you, but we talked about it on Twitter. I think that's what the people want. I think that's what Canadians fans want, is for to believe in them. So you know what? This is for you guys. If you guys win, good for you. But I am not picking you in this series.
Yeah, I mean, I think that everyone's going to pick the Lightning again, and that is what logic dictates, right? I mean, I think you look at these two teams in the regular season, and it's not even a competition. Mm-hmm. The Lightning are far and away the better team, and they added Kucherov. So it's like, yeah, okay, the Canadians added Cole Caulfield towards the end of the season, but they've got some major injuries they're dealing with. It's the Lightning. They're the defending Stanley Cup champions. They look incredible. However, in the playoffs, the Lightning haven't actually been that great. Mm-hmm. They've gotten through it based on their power play, but they're also now going up against a penalty kill that's, I think, 31 in a row they've killed. They're the best penalty kill in the playoffs. They haven't allowed a power play goal since game 3 against the Toronto Maple Leafs, which is ridiculous.
Yeah,
Carey Price has something
that's like a lifetime ago now.
I know, right? It feels like forever ago. The only reason I still remember the Leafs series is because Leafs fans are still crying about it.
Aw, sorry, Steve Dangle.
Not him, actually. He's actually doing great. He's watching the Habs game with Steve Dangle, which is super fun.
You know, I have a bone to pick with you about that. They're only Canadian-only views, and, like, I can't watch it because I'm not Canadian. I was going to tune in to the episodes, like, you had, or the, you know, the watch-alongs you had been on, but I was like, I can't. I'm not Canadian. So,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
They broadcast the actual game in the stream, and so then it becomes a broadcasting rights issue, right? So...
I wish there was like a separate video that was
Maybe I'll mention that to Sportsnet, see if they can figure it out a way.
Yeah, because I would really love to have that on separately if they can just do just, you know, I obviously haven't seen how that works. I'm sorry to hijack this conversation for this, but I was thinking about it because like I just love to, you know, see the commentary. I don't need to see the game. I have it right in front of me on my TV right next to me. So like if you can bring that up, go ahead. But I think that they're maybe excluding an audience of some Americans, or at least one here in Pennsylvania.
I'm sure there's a lot of Americans that want to tune in. I see it every day, people complaining about it being geo-locked or whatever. And I think that's like a constant issue with Canadians and Americans. Like, we can't watch your stuff. You can't watch our stuff. Although I am getting some ESPN stuff from like PK Subban posting it on social media, which is kind of fun. But overall, I think that, it's been really fun. The Canadians power play or Canadians penalty kill against the Lightning power play, I think, is the biggest story of the series. I think I would probably bet on the power play of the Lightning just because they have such a four-cornered threat. Like, you can cover Stamkos as one-timer. Okay, but then Kucherov will have a one-timer. Cover both one-timers. Braden Point's in the middle. Managed to cover Braden Point at the same time. Oh, well, guess what? Victor Hedman's up there up top, and he's going to rove in and take care of loose pucks. It's just such a multifaceted thing to defend. So I think the main thing for the Canadians is going to be don't take many penalties, which they haven't been able to do in these playoffs. They're just not that disciplined.
Yeah.
So things do line up against the Canadians, but in the playoffs so far, the Canadians actually hold the edge in expected goals, according to Evolving Hockey, whereas the Lightning hold the edge according to Natural Stat Trick. The expected goals models are slightly different. So my take is that they've been pretty even in terms of like actual performance at even strength, and the Canadians are actually controlling a significantly larger percentage of the high danger chances, both at even strength and in all situations. And in their last series against Vegas, controlled almost 56% of the chances, whereas the Lightning were just 51% against the Islanders. So I think there is enough here where the Canadians probably can still maintain their confidence and go into this thinking that they can actually beat this team. Mm-hmm. And for what it's worth, Dom Lucision at The Athletic runs these probability things every mm-hmm. series, and he has for years and years now, and he went back years and years to before he even started writing. And over the years that he's been covering this, only six teams total have had less than a 25% chance to win a series and won that series. Four of those teams were the Montreal Canadiens.
So there is hope.
There is hope. They're 4-0 when being this heavily disfavored. This is, and they're under 25% according to his model in this series. So can they go 5-0? My prediction is yes, they do.
I'm going to say they do. You know what? I'm glad we're here for it, because this is, as we said, the cross check of the week that we do every week, breaking down the narratives. And I'm glad we're juxtaposed here. Because I can absolutely see it. This is not going to be a stomp in terms, like, either way, I don't think.
You know what's going to happen, though? It's finally, I believe in them, and they're going to turn into a pumpkin. It's going to be a
fun Okay. I'm glad I'm sticking on my line of not believing in them. So, you know, if the Habs do win the Stanley Cup, I can't get the fans can't get mad at me, because I did exactly what they wanted of the, I did exactly what they wanted of me to do. So, and if, you know, the Lightning win, that I was right, and there's no way I can lose here, is what I'm saying to you, Andrew.
Yes.
But I don't, this is going to be a tough series, and the Canadians have showcased their tenacity all playoffs long, and they're so hard to play against. I don't know if the Lightning will get frustrated, because they're a team that's seen it all. I mean,
they're champions, right?
Yeah, they're the reigning champions. They were the ones who, you know, got swept out of the playoffs a couple years ago by the Columbus Blue Jackets. They faced adversity, not to, you know, use that term or whatever that a lot of people use, but, you know, they faced their demons, and they've come out the other side, and they're the reigning Stanley Cup champions. They know what it takes to win. I don't know if the Canadians will be able to frustrate them in the same way they frustrated other teams like Vegas, like Toronto, you know. I don't know if that will happen, but that will be the key for me in this series. If the Canadians can get the Lightning frustrated and get them off their game and, you know, frustrate them on the power play where they have, you know, produced the majority of their points and goals in these playoffs, they will have a real chance. And for me also, we kind of brushed over it, but goaltending also is big. I mean, Carey Price versus Andrei Vasilevsky is a huge goaltending matchup. Talk about two powerhouse stars right there. Part of me wants to root for the Canadians, because Carey Price is a cool dude, and I am very happy to see him in his first Stanley Cup final. And yeah, like I said, part of me wants to root for them, but I'm not going to do it, because I already towed that line, and I don't think you guys, the Canadians fans, want me to start rooting for you. But good guy Carey Price is on my radar, so if they win, I'll be very happy for him. But I think that I know we like brushed over it a little bit, but what was the stat when the Lightning won their game 7 that Vasilevsky is like undefeated or whatever in like series, like, or has like shutouts in series clinching games? I don't know, there's some record he's really good in like series clinching games, and we know how good Carey Price is. I'm looking forward to that. I mean, I know, like, we talked about the power play and the penalty kill is the big thing, but for me, the goaltending, huge. And these are two titans of the sport, in my opinion. As I mean, you know, Vasilevsky won a cup, and Carey Price is Carey Price. I mean, I know in the regular season he wasn't, you know, as good as we thought he could be, and he's, you know, experiencing, you know, the aging decline. But these are two titans, and I'm really, really looking forward to seeing them do battle in this series.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun, because I think that you look at Vasilevsky, and he's already done it, even though he's the younger of the two, right? And Price this year has just been so laser-focused. You see it on his face, during every game. Like, he sees this as his last shot. That's my guess, you know? And mm-hmm. the same goes for Shea Weber, who's playing through, I think, multiple hand injuries now. Jeff Petrie, to a certain extent, you know, again, playing through a hand injury. And Corey Perry playing through, I don't know, he's held together with, like, sticks and glue. A little bit of tape, but he's playing incredible hockey. The veterans on the Canadiens see this as their one chance, right? And I think the Lightning, having just won, they already know that they can do this. So it's mm-hmm. this juxtaposition between a team that knows that they can win this and a team that is desperate to do it beyond what most other teams in the playoffs have shown. And I just wonder what wins out. I think there's so many great storylines that are going to come out during this series. It's going to be a very... a narrative heavy one, and I don't mean that in the bad sense. I think it's going to be really fun.
And I know we wanted, like, the good ending, quote-unquote, the good ending would have been to have, you know, Vegas and Tampa in the final, because they were two of the best teams in the league all season long. I mean, I know Tampa was, what, third in their division? But they're still really good, and we've known their strength for a while now. But this has, the storylines here are really some of the best we've gotten in a long time. And I'm really, really looking forward to seeing how it plays out. And the more I think about it, the more I think about that these Canadians really are the Eagles that won the Super Bowl a handful of years ago. They're just, you know, the underdog mentality, playing through injuries, facing a Titan on the other side who has, you know, won and seen their share of glory. And they're trying to, you know, take that away from them. I don't know. Maybe that's just me reminiscing on the Eagles because I miss them. And, you know, the Phillies right now aren't doing so well. So I'm trying to look for some sort of Philly sport to, you know, fill the gap of my sports pain right now. But this is going to be a fun one. And in these playoffs, I thought, I really don't want Montreal in the Stanley Cup final. They don't deserve it. But after watching this past series against Vegas and seeing everything they've done up until that point, they absolutely deserve to be here. And I'm happy to have changed my tune. I think I gave them a bit of an unfair shake. I wasn't a big fan of some of their moves in season. And they were the 18th placed team in the regular season by, you know, the official numbers in this weird, you know, divisions we had got them in the playoffs. But they absolutely deserve to be here by the, you know, how they performed in these playoffs. And I'm really looking forward to it. I think this is going to be a great Stanley Cup final. All things considered.
Yeah, and I don't even think you really gave them that unfair of a shake. It's just that when a team underachieves so significantly in the regular season and the impression across the league is that the North Division is weak in the first place, it's hard to say just because they beat the Toronto Maple Leafs that they're all of a sudden a contender, right? And then they face the Jets, who, as we know, are a very poor even strength team. And in the first game of the series, they lose Mark Scheifele to an idiotic play on his part, and Dylan DeMello, who's their best defenseman, and get swept in. I've seen that a few people have mentioned that it's the biggest margin in terms of scoring chance differential in the history of scoring chance recording in a series. Mm-hmm. The second round series between the Jets and the Canadiens. The Canadiens absolutely destroyed them. But they were missing two of their key players. So it's like they beat a bad team and they lucked out against a good team where they had to come back from 3-1. So then, like, it comes to the Vegas series. Of course nobody believes in them. Mm-hmm. Why would you? There's not really that much evidence to say this team is going to be great. But then the way that they played Vegas, which is a team that on paper was just vastly superior to them at every
We'll talk position. About them because they definitely have had some problems. But we'll yes, talk about them have. In our next segment.
Yeah, the finishing ability was not there. But, you know, the Canadiens earned that. You know, they managed to go through both Fleury and Leonard to win that series, which is, I think, a very tough thing to do, to beat two goalies of that caliber. And Price stayed consistent. They are legit. They've been controlling the inner slot all playoffs long. Their play style is maybe not built for sustained success over like an 82-game regular season, but in the short sample size that is the playoffs, they're getting it done. And I'm really interested to see if they can hold it out. I think this little bit of a rest is going to help them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really shocked that it didn't take seven against the Vegas Golden Knights. That's like the biggest thing for me, is that they kind of didn't come out that great in game six. And then as the game went on, they started to get a little bit better, but they were still making some mistakes. But then when it came down to it in overtime, they got it done. And I think that there's killer instinct on these Canadians that we haven't seen from them in years. And, you know, that Cole Caulfield, Nick Suzuki connection is just so interesting to watch. I think there's a little bit of what Braden Point has in Cole Caulfield.
Oh boy. All right, before we finish up this segment, I wanted to say one thing about the fans. Super looking forward to fans in the Stanley Cup final. I don't know what Montreal's stadium capacity is going to be, but I don't know if you know. But I'm very much looking forward to the Lightning playing in front of their home fans, because I think that was definitely missing last year. And if Tampa Bay does win, it would be really nice to, you know, have the fans see them win if it's either a home or away game. But that was definitely missing last year in terms of the playoffs. And I kind of felt a little bit bad for Tampa Bay fans that, you know, there were no fans in the stands for their win last year. So I hope that maybe they get a little bit of redemption in terms of that. But I'm also looking forward to seeing what Montreal has to offer, because I don't know if they will have a full arena when we get to that point. But that's like one thing I wanted to mention, because that's kind of an underrated aspect. It's not really hockey. It's just kind of, you know, the outside, but like the outside effect of it all. But I'm looking forward to watching fans in the stands, because that has definitely been a treat to have this year. And yeah. Before we finish this off, I guess I'll put you on the spot, Andrew. What's your official prediction? You said Canadians, but how many games?
I think it's going to take 7.
Okay. So Canadians in 7 for you. I said on Twitter, Tampa in 6. So I think it's going to be a hard-fought series. I'm looking forward to it either way. But before we go to break and talk about our next topic, which is saying goodbye to the Islanders and Golden Knights, I'm going to talk to you about BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to get all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all your UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Promo code locked on. All right. So we previewed the Stanley Cup final, Andrew. Now we're going to take a look back and talk about the Islanders and Golden Knights, who failed to make it to the Stanley Cup final. The Islanders bowing out in 7 to the Lightning. The Golden Knights bowing out in 6 to the Montreal Canadiens. Which team do you want to start with first? Because both have things to talk about here. And I guess I'll talk about it. We mentioned Vegas in our previous segment. And for me, the thing that stood out was, like you said, their lack of finishing ability. And the fact that they weren't able to score when needed. Part of that was, you know, Carey Price being Carey Price. But boy, they definitely look like... Well, it's funny because, you know, we've talked about the Golden Knights being a team that has star power and really plays fun offensive hockey. But when it came down to it, they just couldn't score. And that was their biggest downfall here. And I know you wrote in the doc, does Vegas go for Eichel? Because that is, you know, the spicy move that has been talked about on Twitter. And I can absolutely see it because they've been in on
everyone.
Yeah. I mean, they've been in on everyone. And
they're so that's aggressive. Been
their, yeah. And that's been their philosophy style since day one. And I am really, really here for a Jack Eichel bidding war with, you know, Vegas at the forefront. I think that will be so fun to keep tabs on in the summer. But what see you on Vegas and what their downfall was against Montreal here?
Yeah, I mean, I think I look at both these teams, Vegas and the Islanders, and I wonder, like, have any two teams both made the conference finals and lost back-to-back years, and we expect such different results, like managerially, going forward? Because I think Vegas is going to do very aggressive moves, because they do every year. I do expect them to go after Eichel. I think that one of the names that might be moved out is Max Pacioretty, mm-hmm. who I thought had a rough first half of the series, but was still getting chances. But you could see he was gripping his stick. He wanted to win that series so bad.
Yeah, you talked about it too. You mentioned you thought that was a big thing coming into this series.
It absolutely was, but I think he really gained his focus back. And the last half of that series, he was Vegas' best forward. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough because Mark Stone really, really, really struggled. I don't think they're going to move on from Mark Stone. He's just too good.
Yeah.
But Max
Pacioretty... And good on Mark Stone for acknowledging... What did he say? He got skunked or something like that?
And he took responsibility for it as the captain. I loved his post-series presser. I thought that was that's leadership right there.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they're going to stick with Mark Stone just because that has never really happened to him before. And Max Pacioretty, I think they like Pacioretty, but there have been rumors that they've been willing to move on from him over the last year or so. And I can see him being a piece to acquire Jack Eichel, because not only... Like, he wouldn't be enough, obviously. They'd have to throw in some futures. But I think putting him in Buffalo also gives Buffalo a high-end scorer to say, like, look, we're still going to be good right now. We're not going to go full-on rebuild. That makes sense for them from a PR perspective. I think that they're going to probably try to do that. But Vegas, there has to be big changes, right? Because you look at what they've done in the playoffs since they made that Stanley Cup final, and it seems like every year they end up not being able to score when it counts or giving up a bunch of goals when it counts. And they're so aggressive from a managing standpoint that I just can't see them sitting pat at all.
Yeah, same. They need to fix their center depth. I mean,
yes. If you're thinking that you're going to lose a series because Chandler Stephenson is out, I'm sorry. Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah.
But I thought Nick Waugh was fantastic in that series. I thought him, Tuck, and Pacioretty were their three best forwards, and with a bullet, like everyone else was.
And they need to, they need to shore up that center depth for sure. And Jack Eichel should be their, in my opinion, anyway, their number one with a bullet team, to like their player to get, because he's incredible. I do kind of wonder if it, this is just me speculating, if he's kind of like the, like a Taylor Hall situation, where he is maybe not destined to be the number one guy. So maybe Vegas will need to add a little bit more to their center depth, but I really think, like I said, it'll be fun to watch a bidding war for Jack Eichel, because it's, you know, always fun when there's, you know, activity in the off season. And it's a bit of a shorter off season too this year, but the way that the schedule is. So I think that's definitely a big thing. I don't know about you, Andrew, if I'm thinking of like the what they do, what Vegas does in net this year. Because are they going to, you know, keep both Fleury and Leonard? Will they ride with just one? Yeah. Will they ride with just one? Will they get rid of both? I don't think they're going to get rid of both. But it is a big question. What do you do in goal? I don't have their they're cap friendly, like their contracts pulled up right now. But I am. That's one of the big things for me is what do they do in goal? Because I think that they, I know we like kind of were questioning a bit of their goaltending, like moves and stuff like that. But I like both players and they're both really good goaltenders. But I'm just interested to see if one of them will want to move on and try for like a starter role, or if, you know, they'll keep them both. But I think that that tandem worked really well. I don't think goaltending is what brought them down in this series. It was definitely their lack of scoring and kind of their defense sometimes. Sometimes their defense was just kind of in weird positions on goals. And I was like, what are you guys doing out here? But I don't know if you have any opinions on the Leonard versus Fleury thing, but I think that might also be a thing to watch in the offseason for Vegas as we move towards, you know, free agency and all that.
Yeah, Fleury's only got 1 year left on his deal, so I wonder if that's a situation where they show some uncharacteristic patience for the Golden Knights, and they see how, like, if Fleury starts out next year as great as he did this year, then maybe they move him at the deadline, because I know that they also have Logan Thompson, who's their, like, quote-unquote goalie of the future that a lot of people want to see up with the big club. He had a .943 save percentage in the AHL last year.
Wow.
He played one game for Vegas, didn't get scored on. You know, it's interesting to see, like, if they want to roll in their 24-year-old goaltender of the future and move out Marc-Andre Fleury and go Leonard Thompson, I think that makes a lot of sense, and it opens up some money for them to do some more aggressive moves, which they love to do. So I could see that happening. I don't think that they're going to choose Fleury just because it seems to, like, from what Jesse said, he the coach prefers Leonard, right? Mm-hmm. So Fleury was just so good this year that they kept on going with him, and he stole that the starting spot. But I think Leonard is the better goaltender overall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Fleury will be another year older. Yeah. If, you know, the Golden Knights were a part of the expansion draft that's coming up shortly, I would say, you know, maybe Fleury is, you know,
expanded again.
The journeyman goaltender, but they are not. And I guess I want to say a quick word, because news broke of Seattle hiring Dave Hakstol as head coach. We weren't going to talk about it, but I was just thinking about it in this segment, and I'm like, man, my second favorite team, the Seattle Kraken, hired the head coach of the Flyers, who I had to suffer through putting, you know, Chris Vandevelde out there and scratching Oscar Lindblom for Jori Lehterä in his last game of the season. I don't want to have to deal with this man again. I don't know what they were thinking with that move, but maybe he can change. We'll see. I guess that's the big question, is because there's been a lot of talk about coaches who bombed out in their first jobs, but then, you know, rebounded to, you know, learned their lessons and rebounded. I'm not sure if Dave Hakstol is that coach, but I'm willing to be surprised. But dude has a, you know, beard and goatee now, so good for him. I will be cautiously watching Seattle now. My excitement has kind of dipped a little bit because I watched a Dave Hakstol team for a very long time, and it was... I will say, though, Dave Hakstol's a nice dude, because I did cover the Flyers freelance for The Athletic when he was head coach, and he was always a nice guy when I talked to him. could be short on some answers if, you know, rephrase things the wrong way. But dude was always
every coach.
Yeah, dude was always nice to me when I was in the locker room. So he's a good dude. I just kind of questioned his coaching ability, but we all know how it is in the NHL. But I guess I just wanted to mention that before we move on, because that would have been a story I think we would have talked about. I think there's just a lot happened in the in the Thursday to Tuesday range over the weekend. So I just wanted to mention that. I don't know if you have any thoughts on Dave Haxtell as the coach of Seattle. But
yeah, I think the one thing that Haxtell is very good at is devising defensive systems, right? Mm-hmm. Like Philadelphia under him were very, very, very stingy. They just didn't produce as much offense as they should have with the forwards that they had there. And some of the lineup decisions were questionable. Although I think every coach kind of has that, you know, like they have their guys that,
I just don't want to see Andrew McDonald again. I don't want to see. I don't want to see Andrew McDonald again. If never again, please.
But again, like Haxtell did do a lot of good work with the Maple Leafs defensively as well. So I think it's interesting to see that Seattle went that way.
Yeah,
when,
that's big.
The Golden Knights went with Gerard Gallant, who's like all about offense and pace, right? So it's very different strategies from the coaching's perspective, at least from the outset. We'll see how it goes. I'm excited to see what they do because I don't think they're going to have as easy of a time as Vegas did hoodwinking people, because I think teams will be far more cautious this time. But then again, hockey men gonna hockey men.
And also, so, it might just not be their style. I think that they're taking a different style of, you know, the long game. Vegas was playing the short game here, and they're still playing the short game. But I think Seattle's taking the long game. But I can tell you one thing, you're gonna see a lot of point shots from Seattle defensemen this year, because, oh boy, does Dave Haxtell love those point shots. Anyway, we'll continue. I know you had one other point on Vegas, that if, you know, Pete DeBoer could be in trouble. I don't really know. I think they might give him, you know, one more kick at it, because like we talked about, Vegas is still a new franchise. They're still overperforming what we like thought of them, at least in my opinion. Like, they're still a new franchise out here, and they're like, to me, still like in the, you know, the early years of their franchise, and they are, you know, I don't know. I don't know if he's in trouble, but I would definitely think, you know, if Vegas gets off to, it isn't as good or doesn't make the correct moves that in the upcoming offseason, I think there might be a, the hot seat might be there for him, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that he's not going to get fired in the offseason. It's hard to fire somebody who just made the conference finals twice. But my opinion is the goalie carousel in that series, I wonder if, you know, the management views that as that was where it all started to go wrong for them. Like, not sticking with Leonard after he played that fantastic game four. I wonder if, like you said, they get off to a bit of a slow start, or slower than expected in next season, and then he's like the first coach fired next year. I can see that happening. Is it likely? 50% maybe? I think he's in a much more precarious situation than he was 2 weeks ago. That's for sure. Whereas the Islanders, which we'll obviously shift to next, I don't think Barry Trotz could be in a stronger position.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they're not going to make very many aggressive moves at all. I think they're full on stay the course.
Oh, yeah. I don't think the Islanders have to do anything. I mean, they will be going back into the Metro next year because, you know, the divisions will be back to normal. Or I guess I don't remember what they're doing with out west with Arizona. I don't remember who's moving to accommodate for Seattle, but we don't have to get into that now. But yes.
I think the main point, the takeaway from going back into the Easter or the East there is or the Metropolitan Division is that both the Metropolitan Division and the Atlantic are going to be tough.
Oh, yeah.
Like, extraordinarily tough. And it's like, the West has two good teams. It's crazy. So, like, people complain about the Canadiens finishing 18th this year and making the playoffs. Everyone who finishes below, like, third or fourth in the West next year is going to be like, why are you even in the playoffs?
Yeah. I mean, you've got Pittsburgh. You've got Washington. I mean, Philly could still, you know, make some noise next year. Rangers will be better. Carolina is back in that division too.
Yep.
So the Islanders will have a tough path for them, but I think that they, I don't think that they, what can they do? What's the, like, they just ran into the Tampa Bay buzzsaw twice.
Again.
Like, it's like one of those things where, like, what can you do if you're the Islanders? I guess you just got to keep rolling with it, because what else is there?
Well, I think they can also say that they made it to game 7 this year. They only made it to game 6 last year. And they were without Anders Lee.
Losing Anders Lee to injury is huge. Definitely had a major impact on them in this series, so they, you know, can get him back healthy. But they have a bunch of UFAs coming up. I mean, we talked about the Kyle Palmieri and Travis Ajak trades. But there'll be UFAs this year. I'm not sure how much they'll have to, if they'll sign them or not. Casey Zizekas is also a UFA, at least on the forward side. Those are the big ones. Anthony Beauvillier is a RFA. On defense, Braden Coburn is a UFA. Andy Green is a UFA. I forgot they have Corey Schneider on their team as a UFA. So they have a bunch of possible players they can let go of and maybe sign some a bit more, you know, of an offensive push. I could see that as a possibility for them this year, but I still think they should just run it back. One of these times it's going to have to go their way. I mean, we've seen, you know, teams like Tampa Bay and Pittsburgh stick it out and not make any major tweaks, and then it works out for them in the end. So I could definitely see that being something for them, but I don't think that there is any reason they should be worried. It's just one of those things where they just keep running into the Tampa Bay buzzsaw over and over.
Right, and this is the second straight year as well that multiple very good analysts have said, oh, you know, I don't know if I believe in the Tampa Bay Lightning, don't know if this is sustainable. And then they make the playoffs and they look really good. And then at the beginning of the playoffs, they're like, oh, well, you know, Tampa Bay Lightning probably can't do this again. Might not be sustainable. And they go right to the conference finals again. So it's like the Barry Trotz method works. I don't think there's any question about that. It's just about getting over the hump. So I think small tweaks here and there, hoping to stay a little bit healthier, especially key players. The UFA questions are going to be interesting. I think Kyle Palmieri, it's very unlikely that they don't retain him. He was just such a good fit.
Yeah. Yeah. Travis Zajac, though, I don't know if they'll have much of a use for him, but Palmieri should probably be on their list to re-sign. But I guess that'll be it for our, you know, goodbyes to the Vegas and New York. Sorry, I picked you, Vegas Islanders. Not looking forward to seeing a bunch of you still in the Metro next year. But I guess we'll move on and do our pop culture roulette segment that we always do every week right after this. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever, and the new improved Built Bar is even deliciouser. Did you know that Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors, plus the occasional limited time flavor? If you don't know the Built Bar flavors, well, you're missing out, as you've got coconut, coconut almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate, and salted caramel. There's something for everyone with Built Bar, and if you haven't tried all the flavors, you can get a mix box where you'll get 2 of each of the 9 flavors. Not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting, but they're healthy too. Built Bar is great for any health-conscious person, as you can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Most of the flavors have 17 grams protein, only 130 calories, only 4 grams sugar, and only 4 grams net carbs. A couple of the other flavors have 18 grams protein, just 180 calories, just 5 grams sugar, and 5 grams net carbs. 9 amazing flavors, all tasty, all healthy. Order today and get that raspberry or mint brownie, or whatever you'd like. All bars are covered in 100% chocolate and are soft and easy to chew. So go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. All right, Andrew, it's our pop culture segment we do every week. I hate to break it to you, but I haven't watched Loki.
No!
I was on vacation, Andrew. I was busy relaxing on the beach and being with my family. You could talk about it if you want.
No. I'm not going to spoil it.
The only thing I know is Loki, my bisexual king. We welcome you to the club. That's all I really know. That's all I've really seen of it. I am looking forward to, you know, seeing more, especially after the reveals of the previous episode. I'm sorry to, you know, put the kibosh on your pop culture pick. I didn't really do much pop culture stuff myself because, as I said, I was on vacation. But last week, there's a new Critical Role mini campaign that premiered last week on Thursday, and it was very fun. And the guy who usually dungeon masters the whole thing, so you know the guy that runs it, he wasn't doing it. He stepped aside to let a newbie come in and DM, sit in the DM's chair, Abria Iyengar. She was great. Really looking forward to seeing what the mini campaign has in store. It's like an 8-episode mini campaign. Just between the second and third campaigns of the show. And yeah, it was really fun. I'm looking forward to more of these characters and more of the world, because as I've talked about before, I love Critical Role. It's one of my favorite pieces of media. And if you've never watched the show before, I definitely would take a look at this one because it contains like no major spoilers for the campaigns. all new characters, just more of the world that they have built over the course of the show. And it is a fun time. It's just 4 hours of joy on your Thursday evening. So that's, I guess, the any major pop culture stuff I have. Next time, though, I will show up with all my homework done on Loki. I promise you. I was just super busy. But thankfully, my days off are coming on Tuesday and Wednesday. So I will do my best to do my homework and get those done for you so we can talk about it maybe on first Thursday show.
Yeah, it's all good. Don't worry. And you know what? Finally, Disney stopped dragging their feet on a little bit of inclusivity there with Loki, right? They've started to push it a little bit. I know it seems like every other movie now, Marvel was saying like, oh, well, you know, this character in the movie had like this sexual orientation. They didn't mention it or like didn't impact anything. But at least now with Loki, there's something there that they've started to integrate, something other than the societal norm of mainstream. So that's good. Also, I don't know if you caught, but he's also listed as gender fluid in the show. So there's more of that, which could be a reason why another main character is a certain way. So there's lots. I'm trying not to spoil anything for anybody who hasn't watched, but I highly recommend watching Loki. The first three episodes have been very good. And as for going forward, I know that Tom Hiddleston said that episodes 4 and 5 were his favorite. So I'm very much looking forward to that.
All right. I definitely gonna have to catch up now. My parents were watching it yesterday during dinner and I was like, nope, like the new one. And I was working. So I was like, nope. I'm just going to take my burger and, you know, go elsewhere in the house so I could eat and not get spoiled. But I'm definitely looking forward to watching those. I think we talked about it. I'm enjoying this in the same vein I enjoyed WandaVision. It's definitely more of the quirky stuff. So I hope Marvel does more of that. Like I said, not that Falcon and the Winter Soldier was bad. It's just I think that if they, you know, lean more into the weird and quirky stuff, I think that works really well for their television shows. I mean, The Mandalorian is Star Wars, but it is, I guess, more focused in, like, you know, not day-to-day life, but it's kind of like...
It's like a Western.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like a Western in that regard, but it still does some fun and weird stuff. I think that Marvel definitely should continue on with the weird, because this has been very fun and I'm looking forward to seeing what it has, because there's like 6 episodes, you said, something like that.
Yeah, it's only 6.
It's very short, so definitely gonna consume all the Loki content I can. I don't really have anything else other than that, though. I didn't really get to read on vacation, I hate to say it. I read a little bit in the final day, but I was, you know, catching up on so many podcasts that had been backlogged, including ours, because I wanted to hear how, you know, you and Laura did. But I was not to say that I was busy on vacation, but my family goes hard on vacation, so I didn't really get to do much in terms of like pop culture stuff. But hopefully for next time I'll be able to talk about Loki, and I don't know, I'm trying to think if there's anything else major coming out that's in my sphere. But
no, I mean, the only thing that I got to watch this weekend was Frozen with Dylan while Miles was taking his nap, and he wanted to watch Elsa, so.
I love Frozen. I really do. Just the first one, right? I would assume.
Yeah, the first one. He has watched the second one, but he wanted to watch the first one.
That's a good pick. And, you know, we were talking about how hot it was at the start of the show. I could very much use...
Feels cooling.
Yeah, I could very much use a magical snowstorm that, you know, blankets everything in cold snow and chills us all out for a little while. I think that would put us in the mood for, you know, Stanley Cup final hockey with, you know, snow out and stuff like that, but... I do kind of miss, though, when we had last year, when the games were on, like, during the day and I could watch them outside.
Yeah, that was great.
That was fun. I did miss that this year, but it's summer. It's the Stanley Cup final. I don't think there's anything more you could want right now, Andrew. I don't know about you.
No, I mean, this is a great time. The only thing that kind of stinks is that there's not hockey every night anymore. Now it's down to once every other night. My wife is ecstatic about that. We can catch up on some of our other shows that we've left.
Yeah,
left
I do miss. I do miss the everyday hockey, but it is nice to get a breather because the playoffs can be a bit of a grind, a fun grind, but a grind nonetheless. But I think that's all we have for you today on the Crosscheck NHL Show. As part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Make sure to follow us on your podcast platform of choice, from Apple to Odyssey to Spotify, and rate and review us while you're at it. You can follow the pod at CrossCheckNHL on Twitter, me at Mary C. Clark on Twitter, and Andrew at Andrew Berkshire on Twitter. We'll be back on Thursday with some more Puck Talk. See you next time. Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.